Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The 36th branch, Budhimanta Khan, was extremely dear to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was always prepared to carry out the Lord's orders, and therefore he was considered to be the chief servant of the Lord. Purport. Sri Budhimanta Khan was one of the inhabitants of Navadvip. He was very rich, and it is he who arranged of the marriage of Lord Chaitanya with Vishnupriya, the daughter of Sanatan Mishra, who was the priest of the local Samindar. He personally defrayed all the expenditures for the marriage ceremony. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was attacked by Vayuvadi, the arrangements of the air within the body, Budhimanta Khan paid off all requisite medicines and treatments to cure the Lord. He was the Lord's constant companion in the Kirtan movement. He collected ornaments for the Lord when he played the part of the goddess of fortune in the house of Chandrasekharacharya. He also went to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was staying in Jagannath Puri. The 36th branch, Budhimanta Khan, was extremely dear to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was always prepared to carry out the Lord's orders, and therefore he was considered to be the chief servant of the Lord. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Kurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vansha Kalpadarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Pachapajitanam Pavanipi Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we're here, this chapter, dealing with the branches of the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, meaning his intimate personal associates. This tree is many-branched, and one of the branches is Budhimanta Khan, he's known as having surrendered to the Lord from the very beginning of his life. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, in Navadvip Mahatmya, that he was a king in Satya Yuga, Suvarna Shesha, and by the mercy of Narada Muni, he had a vision which gave him love of Godhead, and he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar in ecstatic pastimes, and he became pretty wild about that. And what happened was, the dream ended, as dreams do, and he becomes, dejected, to say the least. He cries out in desperation, oh no, this separation is too much for him. Because Satya Yuga is not exactly known for, these elaborate pastimes. It's meditation, it's peaceful, it's all religious, but it's not like a lot is going on. So he had this taste, and he was crying out in separation. And so he heard a voice saying, when Kali Yuga comes, you will take a birth as one of the intimate associates and help expand these pastimes. And so that is Budhimanta Khan. So he's always with the Lord. He was there, it says here, when they made the play where he was playing Lakshmi, Budhimanta Khan was actually playing the Lord. So that's pretty intimate when God say, okay, you'll be me. That's, that's pretty nice. He was there when Jagai and Madai were saved, and in the water sports and the Ganga and all these pastimes he took part. He went with the Lord to Puri. So he is he's one of the homeboys, one of the entourage. And especially this, it's funny because here it says, Prabhupada says, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was attacked by Vayuvadi, the arrangement of air within the body, Budhimanta Khan paid for all requisite medicines and treatments to the cure of the Lord. Prabhupada is kind of, in a sense, you could say, underplaying this pastime here. In Chaitanya Bhagavad, it's explained a little differently that he's having these ecstatic symptoms, Mahaprabhu, which he has because he's the Lord. And just, it's too intense. He's rolling on the floor, you know, kind of destroying the house. And he's expressing himself in this, what's called alaukika, this kind of transcendental babbling. Doesn't make any sense. And, you know, it's pretty fired up, some of these stories of when he has these ecstatic symptoms. So then, not to freak out the devotees, he explains to them, I have a problem with gas. So I have a gastric problem. So that's what's going on, because they're freaking out. So they immediately call for Buddhimanta Khan, because he's one of the richest guys in Navadvip, together with Mukunda Sanjaya. They're very wealthy, and they're associates of the Lord. Mukunda Sanjaya is where the Lord had his school in his yard, where he was teaching Nyaya, logic. So these are guys, and they come, and they are very... you know, very generous. They pay for medicines for poor people and such. So they get those guys, and they try to treat the Lord, and he's like, now he's unconscious, and, you know, all these things are going on. And then finally the pastime becomes kind of this parental rasa, where they're taking care of the Lord, and he eases down, you know, and comes out of it. So this is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. These rasas are very deep and very intimate. And we can't understand them. That's why Mahaprabhu explains that he has gas. You know, why would the Lord explain that he has gas? It doesn't... Because it's too much lila is too much for us. Because lila happens when there are contradictions. That's why the male-female relationship always has to have some kind of edge, or there has to be some excitement or some conflict or something. That generates rasa. The problem is, we're not there. We're not actually on the level of rasa. We like tattva. When something makes sense, then we like that, because we're trying to be the controllers and enjoyers. So that's why we get freaked out with these things, when it doesn't seem to make sense. Why is something happening here that I don't make sense of? So we like things that we can understand. That makes us feel secure, because we're taking shelter of something impermanent. We're taking shelter of the material energy, which is constantly changing. So when we understand what is going on, that makes us feel secure. When you're on this level, you're taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord is constant. Now the interesting part becomes when it doesn't make sense. The rasa has to do with something that's strange or something that's dangerous. Or we see also in Krishna Lila, all the inhabitants, all these rasas are always about, oh no, what's going on? Oh, and then it's back to normal. Oh, okay. You know, and then a new rasa. Oh no, what's going on? Oh, they're back to normal. You know, it's not like Krishna is not exactly struggling to make things make sense. It's just he pushes things out of sense in order for some taste to come, some excitement. And this is what happens when you're transcendental. Right? So when we hear sometimes that we say that, you know, we're devotees, we're transcendental, are we actually on this platform? Because this is a science. It's not enough that we just say it. We hear regularly, we hear senior devotees establish tattva and then use as an argument, no, we're devotees, we're transcendental. We don't have to follow an ashram, masculine, feminine principles, you know, this is 2015, we're devotees, we're transcendental. But that's a bogus argument, because you can't use this logic to establish tattva. You have to go by authority. It's explained in the first cantos of Bhagavatam how we have to surrender to authority. Then we can use our logic and speculation to make that authority fit in with what we see with our senses, right? We have three ways of acquiring knowledge: through the senses, through our logical reasoning, and then through shabda, through authority. Now, our tendency, because we're materially contaminated, is to go by our senses, then use our logic to establish the authority. Then I become the authority because I've established it. It seems nice, right? But if everyone does that, it doesn't work out. We have to go the other way, called the deductive method, that we go by authority, then we use our logical reasoning to make whatever that is, that principle, how to make that fit with our life, and then our senses can do something, you know. We use the logic to make it fit with what our senses are giving us. That makes sense. So, for us to reach this level, we have to let go of that conditioning. So, we are, basically what you're saying is, if you say that, no, we're transcendental, we're devotees, we're transcendental, what you're actually saying is we're all uttama adhikaris, we're all on prema, because that's where there is no contamination. So why would you preach something like that? Even if you are, let's say I'm uttama adhikari, prema bhakta, mahabhav, would I then preach to everybody else, yeah, we're beyond all this, we're transcendental? No, I would preach, you got to follow the rules, otherwise you won't get here. Like Rupa Goswami, he's in Raganuga Bhakti, you know, spontaneous. He's just so spontaneous. He doesn't have to follow the rules because he's always engaged fully. So if Rupa Goswami doesn't make it to Mangala Arati, it's because he's been composing poetry for 18 hours straight and he just forgot everything about eating, sleeping, time, whatever's going on, because he's that absorbed. So I heard, just I was in Scotland, someone told me that at a music festival they were out preaching at a music festival, and they were like, hey, this bhakta so and so, where did he go? No, he's on Raganuga, he only performs bhakti when he feels like it. That's how we understand it, you know. But that's bogus. That's totally bogus. No, we have to follow the rules. And any uttama adhikari would say, no, you have to follow the rules. You go by authority. You don't go by paramatma in your heart. Even though you can, you would never preach something like that. You know? So whenever we hear this argument, no, we're devotees, we're beyond the modes, just run away. Run away from that. It is total bogus. Does that make sense? That you, if you're on that level, you wouldn't preach it, you'd just live it. So if we want to be a part of these leelas, we have to accept the full thing. Not that, you know, well, you know, a little bit of... the Lord likes variety, so a little bit of British culture in with the Vedic, that just creates a little variety. No, it doesn't. Because what is British culture? Take Google British culture. I googled recently American culture. What comes up? Motorcycles, burgers, half-naked women. What's the common denominator here? It's controlling and enjoying. That's mundane culture. There's no variety in it. It's one thing. It's I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Vedic culture is I'm the servant of the servant. And then it takes on all sorts of varieties of applications, unlimited. Strange things happen, and when you reach the high level, then it starts to not make sense. And that's just even more glorious. But at this level, we just go by the rules. That's the way to become liberated. Not that, well, you know, I kind of like my conditioning, you know, it's kind of comfortable, you know, I've been walking around with it for so many lifetimes, you know, it suits me, you know, I fit fine. Okay, fine if you want that. I'm not judging. I'm just saying, don't preach that. Manu Samhita says, Prabhupada says in Second Canto that the standard law book for man is Manu Samhita. Every human being should follow Manu Samhita. And Manu Samhita says, if you do bogus stuff, you get a reaction. If you do good stuff, you get a reaction. Always get a reaction. Whatever you do, there's a reaction. If you preach bogus stuff, you get 100 times that reaction. So why would you do that? You know, if you have conditioning, that's fine. We all have conditioning. We can work with that. We're in mixed devotional service, you know. It's still a high level compared to what's going on the outside of this building. But if we start preaching our conditioning because we're so comfortable with it, then we start moving in the opposite direction. So we have to distinguish between karma misra bhakti and bhakti misra karma. Misra means mixed. But what is the principle here? Is it the karma or is it the bhakti? If your karma misra bhakti, you're a devotee and you're trying to be a pure devotee, and you just have some karma mix in there because it doesn't magically go away the minute you take a bead bag in your hand. You just have to work a little on it. Only 20, 25 years, that's fine if you're serious. But you have to work at it because you made the mess, so you clean it up, right? But if it becomes bhakti misra karma, then you're using your bhakti to justify your karma. You're actually protecting the mix, the conditioning, using the purity that you gain from your bhakti. Then we're moving in the wrong direction. This is karma kanda. So when we say that, no, we're beyond the modes, it means, or you know, we're Vaishnavas, we don't have to follow. No, we don't. We have to try our absolute best. That's all we have to do. If we're going by karma kanda, we have to get every single little detail correct, otherwise there will be no effect. But because we're devotees, if we mess up a little bit, it's all right, because our intention is pure. So intention is more important than performance. So if the intention is pure, then we can mess up a little bit with the mantras or what goes where. Some back in the day, Prabhupada was doing a yagya to, you know, inaugurate the Amsterdam temple, and he where's the fruit? You don't, where's the fruit? And the devotees went, and they were gone for a long time, Prabhupada, what's happening? They came back with fruit salad. It's all right, because the intention is pure. They're like, oh, fruit, we better arrange it nicely for Prabhupada. He's so angry, you know, so we make a fruit salad. They didn't know that it was meant for the yagya. But it works. We just do the yagya because the intention is pure. If you're a karma kanda, you're doing it for your own sake, so I can make a yagya, so I can become a big person, social status, whatnot. Fruit salad won't cut it, you know. There's the story of Diti, where she kind of, well, Kashyapa Muni messes up because she convinces him that it's time to have a baby. Because Kashyapa Muni's, her co-wives have babies, she doesn't, so she gets a little fried out with that. And that means that she's kind of enticing Kashyapa Muni, and she convinces him because he's a jnani, his bhakti is not so strong. So they conceive a child at dusk, which is not a good time. So Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu comes out of that. So then the whole leela with those guys happen, and finally they're killed, and then Diti figures out, because she's emotionally attached to the situation, even though she knows very well what she did wrong. Immediately after the conception, she repents and offers prayers. But she's still so attached that she figures out this is Indra's fault, because he's the king of the demigods. He went to Krishna and made all this happen. He killed my baby. So she makes a yagya to get a son that will kill Indra, but because of a slight mispronunciation, she got a son that will kill the enemy of Indra, so she gets a devotee, and a whole different leela happens. So this is what happens with karma kanda, that you get one little detail wrong, and it just flips. So if we're saying that, no, we're beyond that, we're devotees, it means that our intention should be pure, not the execution doesn't have to be pure. We can mess that up, as long as we're trying our level best. And then we will approach these leelas. So the whole idea that, you know, well, I like the philosophy, but we don't need this Indian culture. It's not Indian culture, it's Vedic, it's given by God. Because it's the absolute natural expression of the philosophy. A philosophy doesn't make sense if there's no expression. That's the masculine and feminine principle. The masculine is the philosophy, it's the principle, and the feminine is the expression of it. So the philosophy has absolutely no value unless you express it. You know, that's the jnanis. They just sit and think, you know, where's the pastime? Where's the fun? Where's the value? There's no value. But in order for it to be pleasing to the Lord, it has to be based on a principle. So they work together. So the Vedic culture is just a natural expression of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So to the extent that we can apply that in our life, to that extent it'll work. And then the counter argument is, No, no, because we freak people out with all our Vedic. You know, we have to fit in. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. Shri Shri Shita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. Gornitai Ki. No, no, we don't want to freak anyone out. We're not freaking anyone out. I walk around like this all the time. In London, people stop me on the street and ask, what's going on? You know, can you? How do I get into some yoga? You know, do you have a center somewhere? I want to come. I went to buy a pair of shoes. He wanted to come for lunch. It works. The only people we freak out is ourselves. I was talking yesterday to some Western outreach retreat. You know, completely new devotees. I'm talking about Varnashram and the caste system. They're fine. We're the ones who freak out about this. Because we want to fit in. Because that's our mix. We're mixed devotees and we're protecting our mix. I like my Western conditioning, so I want to fit in with the Westerners. I don't like it if they think strange things about me. That's why we're protecting it. And that's why it's not working. If we're going to change society, how are we going to do that if we want to fit into that society that where we're going to change? You know, how are we going to tell people to change their lives and become Krishna conscious if we're walking around just like them? They're going to think, well, I'm pretty Krishna conscious already, you know, what's the difference? Strength comes from purity. Purity comes from absorption. It comes from faith in the scripture. And this scripture, Chaitanya Charitamrita, is given to us because we don't know how to apply it. Krishna came in his Swayam manifestation 5,000 years ago and gave us all the activities. We still didn't get it. So now he came 500 years ago and told us exactly how to apply it. And this is what he gave us. If we still don't get it, we're in trouble. There is no value to the mundane. It is temporary. And therefore, we cannot seek any shelter in it. If we see how we see people, to the extent they are mundane and dependent on the mundane and trying to fit in with the mundane, to that extent they are stressed out. When I am in Mayapur, sometimes I, you know, hang out with the locals, and they do not understand stress. They don't understand what it is. What's the problem? I'm trying to tell them, no, because you're busy. And why are you busy? Because the job. And why do you have the job? No, because the money and the government and the taxes. Why do you have? Why? What's wrong with you? We have this idea that the rest of the world wants to come here and enjoy. The truth is, most of the rest of the world is looking at us, thinking, "What went wrong with you guys?" Because we're not happy. We make the advertisement looks happy, happy, smiling. And then if you buy this product, you'll be happy. Everybody knows it's not true, and yet they do it because they don't have faith in this. Now, we're the devotees. We're supposed to save them. So if we don't have faith in this, what's going to happen? Nothing. Nothing's going to happen. Prabhupada saw devotees wearing this dress. He saw just like Vaikuntha people, you know. I had one person, I was preaching to him, he was a jnani. I was telling him so much philosophy. It just wasn't working. I put him in a dhoti, he got it. Wow, this is amazing. It's like wearing clothes and not wearing clothes at the same time. Immediately. We have to have faith in the culture as well as the philosophy. It works. It's based on principles of humility, of simplicity. It's based on a God-centered view of the world. The mundane is based on a human-centered view of the world. It doesn't work. It never has. It never will. It doesn't. Manusamhita says, and that's the law book of man, he says, anything not Vedic is modern. So this idea, oh, it's 2015, you know, all this Vedic is so archaic, then you're making the transcendental into the mundane and the mundane into the spiritual, you know, the principle. You're turning upside down what's the detail and what's the principle. It doesn't work. That's what gets us into trouble. So if we want to get out, and I'm assuming we want to get out, then we have to surrender to the culture as well as the philosophy, because it's given to us as mercy. It's trying to help us because we're confused. Right, the dog in a bear trap. will snap at anyone who tries to help it, to tries to save it, because it's in a frustrated situation. So that's us. When we can't distinguish actually who's coming to help us and who's coming to kill us. But that's conditioning. That conditioning means mode of ignorance, right? That's what the whole material cosmos is made of, is mode of ignorance. The first thing when the pradhan separates is you add false ego. False ego is the mode of ignorance. So we turn things upside down. We think the cure is the problem and the problem is the cure. We'll do all these, bridge preaching, and Western outreach. It's fine. You can call it what you want, but when you give the philosophy, you give it pure. When you give the culture, you give it pure. Not all of this, you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. And we're not trying to put a guilt trip on anyone. Whatever you can follow, fine. Whatever you can't, fine. It's not a problem. But when you start preaching it, when you start preaching the mix, then it stops working immediately. It just stops working. It just becomes mundane philosophy. And there are thousands, if not millions, of these mundane philosophies, and none of them work. That's why I was dejected, because I tried all these philosophies. I looked at them, I read them, I studied them, and there was just more questions, and, they didn't work. And I read my first Prabhupada book, and he started where they were trying to get to. This is God, this is you, this is the world you live in, and here's how you get out. And then we take it from there. There's no other philosophy can actually precisely, concisely answer that. Not even the Vedic philosophies of, the six systems of Vedic philosophy. They can't even give you a satisfactory answer to that. It's only Vedanta, and it's only pure Vedanta. So when we want soft preaching, it just means personal preaching. We preach to the person, we see where is this person, and we give that person a little less than they can take. Because that means they'll still be interested. They'll still come to us. Our tendency is to make it mixed and then give it full on so they become completely... One is they become confused because what's what? And the other thing is they become kind of scared because we're putting it on too heavy. No, soft preaching means we give it pure, straight up. This is what we're doing. They can distinguish between me and them, right? When I'm preaching, they know they don't. I don't expect them to dress up like this, They can figure it out. But I give it pure and I give it personal, like a nice guy. Just this is what we're doing, and this is how it works. And then you feed them a little prasadam and then, wow, that's pretty good. And then they'll keep coming back. It works on its own. That's the beauty of it. This works on its own because it's given by God. We don't have to do it. Who was it that said, don't be the achiever, be the receiver. I think that was Sri Ram Swami, actually, I think who said it, who I believe is coming tonight. Anyway, that we're not achieving anything. We're just applying it in our own life, and it will be attractive. Anywhere, I was traveling through the South States in USA, and devotees were saying, like, oh my God, that's hillbilly country. You can't wear that. Yes, I can. And I spoke with many people, and they immediately became like humble and polite, and you want to sit here, there's a little more leg room, and they wanted to know. I was driving in a bus with a guy who just came out of prison, 10 years, tattoos everywhere. He was in a riot where he killed 9 people. And he was saying, I've led a sinful life. Oh God, I'm so weak. He was just opening up to me, Why? Because he knew me? Because I preached to him? No, I was just sitting in this dress. That's all. Everybody understands what this dress means. And if they attack you, that means they're really demoniac. And you just go away. You just walk away from these people. You don't need to waste time on them anyway. Because if you come in Western clothes, maybe they'll accept you. But the minute you start talking about Krishna, they'll go away anyway. You've just wasted your time. Those who don't accept this dress, they won't accept the philosophy anyway. So you just apply the Vedic. Be nice. Tolerant. Understand that it's very difficult. I was preaching to one guy in Scotland. He was under the impression that Darwinian evolution was an established fact. It took me 3 days to dismantle that, but he did it. He cast it away. He accepted finally that it's bogus. Why? Because I gave it to him pure. Not any of this mixed nonsense. So it works. And that's how you get into these, that's how you transcend the modes, that's how you become this Vaishnava who is not, you know, under, he's not, you know, a Varna. No, he acts within his Varna. Mahaprabhu, when he took sannyas, he acted perfectly within the sannyas ashram, you know. It was just, there was just no privacy with ladies because that's just how that ashram works. But it's not that the ladies don't get the mercy. They do. It's just, it has to be arranged a little differently. So when he says, you know, we're not all these varnas, we're not all these ashrams, that's true. What he means is the atma. The soul is not. The soul is transcendental. But our activities are within. You know, if you're acting as a Brahmana, if you're acting as a Kshatriya, you work with the Varnashram system like that, because that's just how it works. It's not a matter of right or wrong. It's a matter of does it work or not. If you work within the Varna of a Kshatriya and you act like a Shudra, it's not going to work. Practically, it's not going to work. That's all he's saying. So we work with it. We apply it in our life as much as we can, and we work with it, and it will all be glorious. That's the little faith we have to have. You know, so how long do we keep going? Is it 1:30, or is it different on Sundays? 9:00. So we keep going. Okay, nice. So, okay, now I have to figure out something to talk about. So how to apply it? Yeah, how to apply it? Basically, we have to find the highest principle. That's how you apply principles. You find the highest principle. And that's also what makes it confusing, that sometimes, well, what about this and then that, you know? So the highest principle is always that whatever activity you're performing, find the authority. So if you have a job, let's say in the material world, you have a job, and you have a boss at that job, then he's the authority for that activity. It's not that I demand to wear this dress if I work at, I was going to say McDonald's, but let's not go there. But, you know, if you work at some, if you're, yeah, flight attendant, right? I walk down the plane with all the refreshments and I insist on wearing this. It's not going to work. I'm just not going to have the job. So for that to work, the highest principle, if I'm, let's say I'm a grihastha, that's where you have jobs, right? None of the other ashrams have jobs. Their ashram is the job. So if you're a grihastha, you have a family, you have a job. So you have to work within that job. You know, you can't be too preachy about it. You just, okay, this is my job, you know, and this is what I do. So you will put on the uniform. And then whatever you can do without interfering with the job, without frying people out, that you will do. That you'll talk a little bit about, yeah, I'm a Hare Krishna, you know, or if you can wear the tilak. I don't know. Figure it out. You know, there's always something. You have some co-workers. There was one Prabhu, he was telling me, he worked in IT, and it's not exactly conducive for yagya and stuff like that to work in that environment, but he just had Radha Madhava as a backdrop on his computer, because they would, you know, discuss computer related topics, and then there on the screen were Radha Madhava, and they would ask, oh, what's going on here? And then, okay, this is Radha Madhava, and this, yeah, that's God, and that's his girlfriend, and, you know, this is how it works. And suddenly, okay, they're, some preaching is going on. So you work within the environment, you know. You don't, on your own, create a material environment, but you work with it. So if you're a grihastha, your main responsibility is to take care of the family. That means you need to have a job. And so whatever job you have, you work within that. That means your boss is the authority. As soon as you're out of the, you're off work, then your spiritual master becomes the authority. Because then it's all about connecting whatever is there back to Krishna. The job is already connected because it's part of taking care of your family. So it's indirect devotional service. There's nothing mundane about it. This is usually one of the questions I get from householders, that how do I balance my material and spiritual life? You don't have a material life. If you have a material life, get rid of it. Don't balance. Whatever you do, don't balance. Get rid of it. But if you have a job in a material setting or a mundane setting, that's not material life. That's indirect devotional service, right? You're doing it so you can take care of your family, so you can go to the temple, offer prayers, and do your japa and whatever you need to do, because this body needs to be maintained. The family needs to be maintained. So there's nothing mundane about it. That's why we say with devotional service, you don't have to change anything. I mean, okay, four regulative principles, right? So no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex, right? A few jobs you'll have a hard time getting away with, like hunter or butcher or something like that, working at a distillery or something. Maybe you should try and look into another venue for your sustenance. But basically, beyond that, you're good, you know? But I mean, try and be nice to the planet, but you need to, I mean, we need to, you know, pollute a little bit. You know, sannyasis are flying all over the place. Their CO2 quota is like off the scale compared to what the planet can actually handle. But they're doing it in preaching the transcendental message of Godhead. So the final result is that it will go down, right? So we have to look at it in a bigger perspective. Sometimes we hear the opposite. No, you're a monk, you can't act, you shouldn't fly. You should be good to everybody, that includes the whole planet, so you shouldn't fly. No, I'm a monk, I'm the only guy who should fly. You're going to, what, Ibiza to get drunk out of your mind? You shouldn't fly, you know? This is this idea that we have to fit in and be nice. We don't have to be nice. We have to preach Krishna consciousness. If we can do it in a nice way, great. But if someone starts talking this nonsense, we don't have to fit in. We don't. People come here because you can't fit in there. Whatever happiness, whatever comfort is there outside, it's temporary and it's illusory. It's based on the idea that if I get this, I will be happy. So when you get it, you'll think, yes, now I'm happy. But it's not there. It's just it touches your sense, your senses, and then it's gone. It's a moment. You know, we see people just get addicted, whatever it is. You know, if it's shopping, if it's intoxication, if it's sex, if it's, you know, association, like football supporters, they get all addicted. They have all the T-shirts and the jerseys, and they know the songs. It becomes a religion because we are naturally religious. They have rituals, they have a temple, they have songs, they have a dress, you know, it's all there, you know. And if you don't play ball, so, hey, no pun intended, if you don't play ball, you're not part of the sectarian group that we call this religion, right? This is the same thing that happens with quote-unquote mundane religion, that it just becomes about the externals. And it's the same thing that happens in the mundane sphere when it becomes about, if I wear a hoodie and some sneakers, and then I'll preach better. It may actually work if you think it works, but it's not the sneakers. It's just because you feel comfortable. You know, that's so the application of this is as much as you can without it becoming a disturbance. So if you need to wear Western dress in order to preach and be comfortable and approach people, then do it by all means, but don't preach it to others because it's your anartha. You have to work with your anarthas. That's how it works. But don't think that this is universal. This is the problem for the neophyte devotee, is that we think that the activity we perform and the devotion is identical. We're not actually able to separate what is the activity that expresses the devotion and what is the actual devotion. So if we do something, then everybody has to do it. Does that sound familiar? You know, if you look at a map of the world and look at what countries Britain has not invaded, you get 11 countries. If we're doing it, everybody has to do it, you know. So it's just a mundanity. So we have to apply it to the extent we can, and then we have to accept that this is me not being up to the standard. We hate that because we think mundane, then standard means like the bottom of the pile. But in Vedic, standard is the highest. It's the standard is perfection. Anything not up to the standard, it's fine, because we're just human beings with our conditioning and we're trying the best we can, and, you know, it works out. Like we were saying yesterday, it's a bumpy ride, but we're walking in the right direction. So that's fine. We don't have to, like, be dejected about that. But because we have this false ego and this pride, you know, we don't like to think that we're not up to the standard, so it becomes, no, we're beyond the standard. Actually, we're just totally transcendental. And it's just not true, because when we're using it, we're using it to establish fact. And there's no establishment of fact. This is just rasa, what's going on in these. This is the mood, right? We're looking for the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because that's why he came, to show us what's the mood of devotion. So the externals are just meant to bring us closer to that mood. Are there any questions at this point? Yeah, Prabhu. Okay, in big corporate world we have to tell lie, yeah. Yes, you play by the rules of the environment you're in. Now we have some very high standards. Again, the standard is very high in Vedic. And there are some, truthfulness is one of the principles that we work by. However, it doesn't always apply, because you have to see it in a larger context. Now, actually, with Mahaprabhu here, when he starts having these symptoms, all the devotees are trying to figure out what's the truth here. Oh, he must be possessed by a demon. No, it must be gas, because he's always talking and babbling. That's clear signal. That's the symptom of gas. But what's actually the tattva is that whatever brings you closer to Krishna, that is the truth, because Krishna is the absolute truth. So you have circumstantial truth and absolute truth. Circumstantial truth is what we would call regular truth. What is, are you telling a lie or are you telling me the truth? It's dependent on the circumstances. But the absolute truth is just whatever brings people closer to Krishna. If you're in an environment and you just, it won't work unless you, let's say, bend the truth. Then that's what you do. I mean, if people attack us, we're supposed to be non-violent. But if we're in an environment where it's kind of violent, we have to work with that, you know, and then do it for Krishna, and then it'll be all right. That's the point of the Bhagavad Gita, that the reasons Arjuna is giving in the beginning are reasons based on the four varnas. You know, it's uncomfortable, there's no gain, it's not pious, and it won't work. That's the four reasons he basically gives. So on all varna levels, it doesn't work. And Krishna says, who cares? I'm telling you to. You know? So whatever brings you to Krishna, if you're, that's why some, they think that this is a violent book, Bhagavad Gita, you know, because they think of it as the material thing. Is it right or not? And in the same way, if you have a job where it's just, it won't work unless you lie, you've got to do it. I mean, a Vaishya, he can't perform his duty if he tells the truth all the time. Because if the customer just comes and asks him, so what did you pay for these apples, whatever it is? He can't, you know, he can't tell it, because he won't make any money. So it's just circumstantial truth. Sometimes you just have to say something. If you use that to get ahead, then you have a problem. That will generate problems for you, because then you're not doing your duty, then it's not within the environment of duty. Does that make sense? That if you're trying to like gossip about your co-workers so you get the promotion, stuff like that, that'll just come and bite you later. But if you're in an environment where it's business, and part of business is to kind of bend reality and, oh, only for you this price, Prabhu, you know, then that's just the environment you're working with, you know, and that's just how it is. And the same thing if you have like a resume, or you know, you're applying for a job, you glorify yourself a little bit, and some of the things that didn't work out, you just leave them out. You know, that's just the way it works. You know, so that's not such a big concern. The concern is the mood in which it's done. If you're doing it to satisfy yourself, to, you know, to have some personal gain, no. But if you're doing it because, you know, you have a family, you have to support the family, you have to have a living, or a, you know, then this is just the environment that we're working with. It becomes part of the environment. Is that okay? Anything else? On the mundane versus Vedic? Yes, Prabhu. Oh, I hadn't thought about them. Yeah. I mean, Krishna West in the principle is absolutely true. There's no disagreement between what I'm saying and what they're saying. They're saying it's not about the dress. I'm saying it's not about the dress. But what I'm saying is, it's not about the dress, so we might as well wear whatever works. And I'm telling you, this works. They may, I mean, it's North America, I don't know. But I have never seen personally how it would help to wear jeans instead of a dhoti. I just don't understand it. So this is my personal, you know, I'm not speaking for anyone except myself now, that the way I see it is that the idea works, but the application doesn't seem to work. I was speaking with one Prabhu who said that actually they have a center in North America and there's a temple nearby, and everybody ends up going to the temple. So if it's like a halfway house, fine, but why are you preaching it as something higher? That I don't understand. It may be my ignorance that I don't understand it. Maybe there's a greater scheme, I'm not getting it. But it doesn't seem to me like it's necessary. You know, if from my experience, I'm walking around like this, and I got people asking me if they can, you know, come to the temple, and I don't even have to approach them, you know. So this whole idea, the problem is, as I see it, and this is not in relation to Krishna West or anything, the problem as I see it is that we're not very good at relationships. So when we're preaching, we kind of put it on a little heavy. And that means we become these strange guys. But if we're just nice and approachable, like Ananda Chaitanya or Sutapa, you know, these devotees, they have no problem connecting. What was the number for Ananda Chaitanya this morning? 90 Maha big books in a day and what, 40 medium books? That's a lot of books, you know. And sometimes, I mean, they wear karmi clothes and saffron and you know, dhoti. That's not the main point. The point is that they're approachable. They're nice, you know. So whatever you feel comfortable wearing, do it. But don't preach Western clothes. If you say it doesn't matter, then why are you preaching it? If you say it doesn't matter what we wear, why are you preaching, no, you have to wear this instead of this? If it doesn't matter, just don't worry about it. You know, if you open your closet, you only got Western clothes in there, you put something on. You go out, you preach Krishna consciousness. Not that you go on the internet, you know, and start talking about how everybody should wear Western dress because it works so much better. Yeah, it works better for you, but that's because you feel comfortable in it. That's what people want. They're in the material world. It's a scary place. They want to feel comfortable. If you feel comfortable, they'll be attracted. If you feel comfortable like this, they'll be attracted to it. You know, but this is simple. The thing with the Western dress is it's based on the lower modes. It's based on passion and ignorance. That's where it comes from. So that means if you wear Western dress, what kind of Western dress? Dress easy, dress casual, that's what usually happens. But then the emos won't appreciate. Or the punks, you know, or the skaters, or the whatever you got, or the guys down at Wall Street, they won't appreciate it because it's just not, that's not how you look. If you walk around like this, everybody appreciates. I can go to the neo-hippies, I can go to the homeless people. They all know the Hare Krishnas because we give charity. And they all say Hare Krishna when I walk past. In London, the homeless people. I think we can thank Parashuram largely for that. But the Wall Street guys, they also appreciate because, he knows what he's doing. You know, he's not one of us, but he knows what he's doing. I can go to a ball at the Queen of Denmark's, you know, palace. I can wear this because it's a traditional dress. It's appreciated. The only two places I can't go is a heavily dominated Muslim country and a university in the West. They freak out. Otherwise, I'll walk anywhere. Everybody appreciates. I've never had any negative comment. So why are you saying it doesn't work? I don't understand that. Where does that come from? You know, only thing I can, with my limited anuman, with my limited logic, which I shouldn't establish truth based on, but the only thing I can see is that they don't feel comfortable. And so they're not attractive. You know, so that's just, you know, that's just my two cents on this. I don't have a problem with any type of preaching. You know, it's not that I think you have to be Vedic. You have to be comfortable, but we have to understand that the Vedic is given for us to be eternally comfortable, and the mundane will make us temporarily comfortable, right? So if we're in that mundane consciousness, and we're just attached to our Western conditioning, then use it, and use it for Krishna. That's fine, you can use it. But don't at the same time say, no, we're Vaishnavas, we're transcendental. We don't need to follow the rules. Because that is total bogus. You know, this, you know, you have in Denmark, you can't whistle and have flour in the mouth at the same time. I mean, or in Bengal they say you can't whistle and suck sugar cane at the same time. You got to go with one of them, you know. So if you're transcendental, why not dress like Mahaprabhu? You know, it seems to work for him. And he's not under the moat, so that means it eternally works. It's not that it works in Navadvip 500 years ago. It works in London today. But if you are under the modes, fine, that's not a problem, because Mahaprabhu came with so much mercy. It's yours anyway. Just wear whatever you need to wear and just talk straight out philosophy, you know. I've seen some people look pretty far out, preach philosophy like anything, like super successful, because they believe in it. And that's why sometimes the neophytes are the best ones. You don't have to be an Uttamadikari to make devotees. The neophytes are so enthusiastic because it's new. They just got it, and that is what everybody wants, you know. So then in the middle you have this like long haul where you try to get rid of the anarthas, where you try to get rid of this conditioning, and it's a little bit hard work, you know, and sometimes you're not that enthusiastic and it becomes a little bit difficult. So then is the question, do you admit that that is happening, or do you change the philosophy? No, actually my condition is a higher level than the pure thing, right? That's your choice. But then towards the end, if you don't change the philosophy, you'll become enthusiastic again, because then you really start to figure out this is actually working. So that's just, it doesn't matter where you are, as long as you admit where you are, as long as you're, you know, truthful about where you are, then it'll work. The principles of Krishna consciousness can be applied in any setting. You know, I got one guy, he used to be on books, and he was like, you're pushing books, and then if they didn't want to take a book, he was like, can I bum a smoke? You have a cigarette? Can I get it? Because he was not on the level where he'd given up, you know, his smoking. And it was working still, you know, they didn't care. Because he's not saying follow me, he's saying follow Prabhupada. That's the beauty of it. We're not saying I'm the authority, we're saying Prabhupada is the authority. Don't follow me, follow Prabhupada. Because he's doing such a wonderful job on me, it might work for you. So when you use the anuman, when you use the logic to establish siddhanta, establish truth, establish tattva, then you're saying, I'm the authority. Right? With my brain, I can figure out how we're going to do this. Let's change this, because this is 2015. It's never been done before, but let's do it, you know, because we're above the modes. Whew, that's risky business. That's very risky business. You know, so we're above the moats. We don't have to change anything. We can work with anything that's there. We can work with Western clothes. We can work, but don't make that the philosophy. That's just our, you know, conditioning. And because Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada are so merciful, they've given it to us, and we can take advantage of it, and we can go back to Godhead. Even us, who are totally, totally under the moats, you know. And that's how it works. It's just mode of ignorance just makes irreligion seem religious and religion seem irreligious. It doesn't matter how many years you've been in the movement, the principle is the same. You know? So it's like the last snare of Maya is this pride that you actually get an artist from performing bhakti, because you're doing bhakti misra karma rather than karma misra bhakti. So then people start glorifying you, you get all the facilities, and you start to think, yeah, I'm pretty qualified. And then you figure out, oh, actually we should do like this, and you forget to check, have the acharyas actually said this? Have they actually advised this? You know? Bogus philosophy. There's nothing, there's no way around it, you know? So, that's the yeah, Prabhu. Mind and Shastra, yeah. Yeah. So So with even when we're reading whatever Shastra, even Bhagavad Gita, our mind will try to justify our conditioning. Yes, exactly. That's what Prabhupada said, that there was in South Africa a program where one devotee asked, so what's most important, the book Bhagavat or the person Bhagavat? Prabhupada said, the person Bhagavat, because he'll pull your ear. So when you read something and you want to justify it, you want to bend it a little bit, no, the person Bhagavat, he'll say, no, this is how you actually understand it. Because we have thousands upon thousands of verses. So if you have some kind of point you want to push, you can come up with some very convincing stuff. You know, if you just, you know, cherry pick verses and slightly bend the truth again, you know. But we're in a setting here where we don't have to bend the truth. You know, this is transcendental. This is not a mundane setting. So that's why we need the person Bhagavat to actually show us, okay, how do we actually understand this? Is this a proper way of understanding, you know? So because you can take anything out of context, and that's what the karmis do all the time, you know? They come up with strange and wonderful explanations, like the Darwinian evolution theory. This guy, I was discussing with him for 3 days, and he was coming up, no, we have this, and the genes do this, and proteins do that. Okay, that's an explanation, and it's based on facts, but that doesn't make the explanation fact. That's the problem, that if it makes sense to us, if we accept it with our mind, then we think it's based on fact. It's based on, in this case, it's based on Shastra, so it must be as good as Shastra. No, you can totally turn it upside down. There are seeming contradictions all over the place, because we have to apply it into the right time, place, and circumstances. So that's why the spiritual authority will tell us. And he doesn't have to be our Diksha Guru. It can be any God brother or, you know, Guru Sadhu Shastra. They can tell us because they're not in our conditioning. So it's easier for them to separate what's his conditioning and what's actually the real thing going on here. So generally, when you have a lot of devotees saying this is not really proper, you should be very weary about sticking to your guns, you know, because what is the basis? You know, where what are you basing this on? Are you basing it just on your logic, on your speculation? That's a dangerous position, you know. So it's yeah, and it happens all the time because it is Kali Yuga, and it's not, there's no, you know, it's not like anyone is condemned for doing it. We all do it, but we just have to acknowledge that we're doing it. Again, it doesn't matter that we're, you know, not up to the Vedic standard. What matters is that we try to be, that we try to apply ourselves into becoming Krishna conscious with all that it covers, and that includes the culture. The culture is extremely important because it's the expression. It's actually what makes it important, because if you just have the philosophy and you do whatever you want to do just because you feel like it, how is that devotional service? Prabhupada didn't call it divine love. Some others, you know, authorities, they say prema is divine love. He didn't say that. He said devotional service. As Parashuram, we were having a conversation, he made this very, very good point. He said devotional service. It means activity. Devotion? Yeah, service. You do some activity for the Lord. If you love him, wouldn't you want to do the activities he loves having done? You know, that's the culture. It's explained down into the minutest detail. These are the dishes we prepare. This is how we dress. You know, this is how we arrange our life. We get up early in the morning, do our puja. It's just all minutely explained. And if we feel like, I don't want to do this, fine, okay. But don't preach it, you know. So we have this tendency. So always seek the shelter of other devotees before you start making these conclusions. See what they say. Is this bona fide? Does it work? Because we can come up with anything, you know. That's what's going wrong out there. They just come up with all sorts of things. So. Guru Sadhu Shastra. Guru Sadhu Shastra. Shastra explains, Guru and Sadhu, they tell you if you're applying it correctly. You know, so like that. Yes?
Group to different group.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so the question is that on one hand we hear that it's best for one to preach to peers, like grihasthas to grihasthas, young people to young people, or but then again Prabhupada, he could preach to anyone, right? Yeah, so in a sense, you know, you could say that there is something to be said for preaching to your peers, because there is definitely a common ground, right? But if you're not in the same kind of situation, you just have to find a different common ground. That's why Prabhupada was so perfect at preaching. He could preach to anyone, because there's always a common ground, because he's a pure devotee. So everybody has a Paramatma in here, even the grossest materialist. So that Paramatma just starts working as soon as Prabhupada is in the vicinity. We're not exactly on that level, but we can do something, you know. We can just see always a situation, you know, we have, is the cup half full or half empty? It's both, right? There's one half is full and the other half is empty. So if we just try initially when we preach to someone to find the half that's full, that means the thing we have in common. Okay, we're both in London, or we're both ladies or men or whatever. There is always something, you know. We're both intellectual, or you can almost always find something that's in common. It doesn't have to be the ashram or the varna, but it can be, hey, you got gray hair, I got gray hair. So, how are you doing? And immediately, there's a relationship. I mean, it's based on nothing. I mean, it's based on the hair, but even that can be an advantage, because it's like, wait, that was easy. We made friends just because of the hair. That guy is easy to talk with, you know. You just make friends, be nice, you know, and then don't push yourself on people. Then just, you know, yeah, this is what I'm doing, you know. Of course, I'm a monk, you know, you have a family, so this, of course it's different. But, you know, the Vedic is to find the principle that connects. That's Vedic logic. It's not just refuting. That's why I said when we brought up Krishna West, I don't disagree with them. So Vedic logic means there's something called Pancha Anga Nyaya. Pancha, five, Anga, limbs, Nyaya, logic. So in five steps you establish something that brings you closer to Krishna. It doesn't matter what situation, this works. So first is you have a premise, you have a thesis, a statement. Like, okay, we want to become Krishna conscious, you know. Then you have an explanation of that. Okay, I'm here in the situation, I'm preaching to Mr., you know, he's from, I don't know, Burundi, you know, and I'm married, he's not, you know, whatever it is, there's seemingly nothing in common, you know. But then you find that, well, okay, I'm preaching, that would be the explanation. Then the counter-argument, that's the third limb, counter-argument would be, we got a guy from Burundi, there's nothing in common here, you know, we can't really communicate. But then the final, bringing it together, that's the fourth step. It's not refuting him or convincing him, it's finding that common point that we're both living entities. You know, we are in this place together, so let's try and find out what we can do to becoming happy. And then the conclusion would be becoming Krishna conscious. Okay, let me use another example. This was not very clear, I can hear that. We have to follow Vanashram. That would be a statement, right? We have to follow Vanashram. The explanation is we have to follow Vanashram because Prabhupada says so, because the Manu Samhita establishes, and that's the law for humankind. Right? That's the explanation. That was the first two steps, the premise and the explanation. Then comes the counter-argument. No, but Mahaprabhu said that we're not all these varnas, we're not all these ashrams, that we're beyond. So how, you know, so now we can get into a mundane discussion. Yes, no, you know, get out of here. Oh, you're so mundane. Oh, you're so such a smart, whatever it is. But what we do in the Vedic is we bring them together. So we say, yes, he did say that. But at the same time, he acted completely within his varna. So we are not the varna, but we act within it. So that way we're beyond because we work with it. And that's the conclusion. You have to follow Vanashram. Does that make sense? So you find the commonality and bring that towards Krishna. So you can do that in any situation. It's easier when you have a lot of things in common. But it can also be harder because you have to move people. And if you have too much in common, it's like, yeah, we're all the same, actually, you know. So it's a balance. But there is something to be said for preaching to people you know, you have something in common with, because you know their lingo, you know their what they're concerned about and stuff like that. But if you become an accomplished preacher, you can always find something that's in common and just make a joke about that, and then you're friends. And then you can start talking about Krishna. Does that make sense? Does that work? Yeah, okay, thank you. Nice question.